and welcome to episode 33 of the Planning Period Podcast. You're at Breakroom. I'm your host, Brad Scheffler. This week on the show, I am joined by Chantal LaRivière, a 20-year educator out of Ottawa, Canada. Chantal is a phenomenal teacher and just a generally fun person, and through hearing her on Voice Ed, I knew she would be a great guest on my show. Chantal and I talk about the need to let students have a voice in their learning, the power of inquiry-based learning, and respecting our students. Before we get to that, though, I want to take a moment to tell you about another project I have going on right now. The students in my tech support class have recently started their own podcast called the Student Economy Podcast. We call it that because it is 15 or so minutes of them having a conversation about two topics, one ridiculous and one serious. The best way to describe it, though, is probably with their intro and their voice, so take a listen.
A class of kids.
Crucial, thought-provoking questions.
And occasionally something serious mixed in.
Featuring the kids of Shreff Tech.
And Brad Scheffler.
Student Economy has become a lot of fun to do. And honestly, my students are doing pretty much all the work at this point. From picking topics, to making the intro music, to doing the audio editing, even running the social media. So please, check out Student Economy. That's at STU. DICHOTOMY, currently available through Voice Ed Radio SoundCloud channel and coming soon to iTunes and other podcasting apps. But for now, sit back and enjoy this week's episode of the Planning Period Podcast, my interview with Chantal LaRivière.
How do you say, like, I used to be a teacher, but this year I'm accompanying teachers? Not a consultant. What do you call it in the States?
We normally call it like a coach or instructional support role.
Okay.
So that's what I call it, at least, as a coach.
I'll say coach.
All right.
I like that word.
It's a fun word. Not cool as La Riviere.
Oh, you got it.
Hey, not bad, right? Okay. All right.
So just try to do it again.
Yeah, I don't have a lot of faith in that happening. Hello, everybody, and welcome to this episode of the Planning Period Podcast. I'm your host, as always, Brad Scheffler. I am joined today, and the ignorant American is about to butcher this, even though I said it once right before the pre-interview. I'm sure I'm going to butcher this, but I'm going to try it anyways. I am joined today by Chantal LaRivière. She's nodding. I think I got it.
Woo-hoo!
Yes. Who is an instructional coach out of Canada, who I know, of course, through Voice Ed Radio Network, and was another member on the inquiry-based learning panel on Sarah Ann Lalonde Show, which at this point I've had three or four of the other guests on there. So my audience knows that panel very well at this point. So, but Chantal, could you tell us a little bit about you, who you are, what you're up to?
Well, I've been teaching for 20 years in Ottawa. So it's, there's a French community over there, and I've been basically teaching kindergarten, first grade, second grade, and just enjoying myself with the kids, playing and learning new, pedagogical techniques and implementing them in my class. And the past 5 years, I was, asked by the ministry to practice inquiry-based learning with my students and see how it would evolve. And, I don't want to turn back anymore. I just love it.
That's been a common theme with the people from that panel. And I was on that panel as someone that has not had a lot of experience. And of the other guests I've had, that never wanting to go back is a pretty common response to it, it feels like. And you said now you're not in the classroom, correct?
Exact. I'm a coach right now. I work for Le CFORP, and it's with the Ministry of Education. We are a group of coaches that go in schools and implement new techniques that the teachers want to implement and use. And it's always related with the technology.
Okay, cool. So what we would call like a digital coach or a tech coach here. I like it. And what do you call it in French? Because your versions are so much better than ours.
Une conseillère pédagogique.
Oh, that is so cool. I want to call myself a la conseillère pédagogique from now on. I think that's what I'm just going to say. It's not even my job, but I'm just going to say it is from now on. that's a completely off-topic question, but is the fascination with other languages universal, or does it only come from the ignorance of Americans' monolinguistic society where it's like, oh, that sounds cool in your language?
No, I'm also fascinated with language. Like when I was in St. Lucia and the people were talking Creole, which is a mixture of French and English. And I could pick up certain words and I was all excited and say, I know what you just said. And no, I think it's everyone's interested in language because it's part of who we are. It's how we breed or how we communicate. So no, I think it's natural to be curious and intrigued and wanting to know different words. And
cool.
Yeah, no, I've always been more obsessed with words than most of my friends, which is why I figured be an English teacher. That makes perfect sense. Well, I know we don't have a ton of time, so I want to go ahead and kick right into our main discussion tonight. And I'm going to just jump in without any sort of professional transition because I'm not professional and ask you my first question, which is, what, in your opinion, is the biggest problem facing education today?
Oh, wow. That's a good question.
Thank you. I try.
Yes. So for me, what I think it's the most problematic is that we don't listen to the kids. We're so focused on the curriculum of giving the knowledge that we forget that we have people in front of us, we have humans in front of us, and we have to make sure that they are part of the learning. We're not just the one who's saying all the knowledge. We have to embrace their knowledge too. So like I'm saying with inquiry, that's what I love about it, is that we go into class in the morning and we say, okay, today we'll do this, and I plan ahead. But then a kid would come up with a question. I'll say, oh, that's a really good question. Would you like to know more about it? And then I would facilitate their learning and try to guide them to know something more. So that's, for me, the main thing that it's, from my concern, is that we forget that we have people in front of us. We're so focused on the curriculum and trying to pass it through and say, okay, I've done it. I did a good job this year. But I don't think that's part of teaching. It's, we're there to guide them, facilitate, and we have to bring them from a certain point, but yeah, there's the people in front of us, the student, the kids in front of us. We have to make sure that we're listening to what they're saying.
I'm in that. And can you tell me, I mean, as someone who has done that, you know, the problem is clear. We're focused on curriculum, but as someone who has actually done that and listened to the kids and had those discussions, what is it you hear the kids say? What is it that the kids say that so many of us are missing right now?
It's not what they particularly say. It's mostly that sometimes we forget to look with our kids' eye. Like, we're so focused on being an adult and respecting all the rules and stuff like that. So the kids, their question is so not pure, but so, like, they think of questions that you would never think. And an experience I had is that we have in Ontario the maple sugar. And we had visited a sugar shack. And the kids had questions, and I couldn't answer them because they were related to all the trees and how the sugar sap leaks and stuff like that. So I asked someone who had the knowledge, and the kids were asking questions. And the person who was like the expert in the classroom said, those are the same questions that scientists are asking themselves right now and trying to figure out answers. So that's what I was like. The questions are profound. And when you listen to them, the knowledge, you can relate it to your curriculum so easily. And the kids, they go further than what you thought, and they go deeper in their knowledge if I had taught the knowledge, I couldn't have gone as deep as they've had with their question. I don't know if that's...
No, that makes sense.
Yes.
You bring up such an interesting topic, or thought, I should say, about sort of the naivety, I think is the word, that naive, but also wondrous and imaginative mindset of a child, and this expert, this actual scientist in the field saying, like, that's the same questions the experts are asking. So what is it? I feel like there's this death period. We have like kindergartners and first and second graders asking the same level of questions as a absolute expert professional still looking for all those answers. And education is that space in the middle where we take away that questioning ability. And it's such a depressing thought at some level, but at the same time, I think it illustrates the problem we're all up against.
Yeah, like I was saying, you have to start with the person in front of you. If they want to know something, if they're asking themselves something, you have to listen. And your teacher. I've heard that we used to be in the Greek time, the teachers was the person giving the knowledge, but in French we're called enseignant, and that person was responsible to bring the child from home to school. And that person was there to guide the student with their studies and to facilitate them if they had questions. So I think that role of being, that's more our role that we should be having right now, is not the one knowing all the knowledge, because it's impossible to know all the knowledge. We should be more helping them to be curious and how to do that and how to ask good questions and how to look for the knowledge and how to be critical thinkers. That's one of the most important thing right now, I think, that we have to make our student aware of, that they have to be critical when they're thinking about something and when they're looking to new content on the internet or videos or just pictures that they're seeing.
So. Your experience is in the younger grades, right? I mean, that's your experience with it. And I'm curious how much you know about the struggle at the higher grades. Is it a similar struggle? Is it a different struggle? And maybe you can come at it from former students of yours who loved your style and loved that. What do you ever talk to them when they've gotten fourth, fifth grade, a little farther along the line, and are not having the same practices? And what does that look like for them?
Well, they always come back and say, oh, we'd miss you, Madame Chantal. You would listen to us and you would make us learn new things. And one of the things the parents would say is that you gave them tools to learn. Like, I don't have to be there for them to know. Like, they know how to do it. They know where to pick up the information. They know how to ask questions. So it's giving them tools to be learners. Like, that should be our role instead of being the vessel of the knowledge. So that's one of the things the kids always come back and say, we love when we were doing inquiry circles. You would not talk. You would not judge. You were just listening to what we were saying. And we could get conversation between each other. And the adult wasn't really there. We just felt that you were listening and taking notes. But so, yep, that's one of the things. It's they felt respected. When they come back, that's most of the things they say, like, you gave us tools and you respected us.
Yeah, and it's a sad state when I feel like that's not what's happening. But, okay, so, but at the same time, I want to maybe play a little devil's advocate here. We went through a school system that didn't do inquiry-based learning when I was in school. That didn't exist. It was, here's what you have to learn. Here's the chapter of the textbook. Listen to the lecture. Take notes. Do 50 problems. And so is there some inherent difference in the current generation to where that doesn't work for them? Or is it something else? What is it that now we're so desperately in need of this change?
One of the things that I've noticed is that as a child, like I'm 45 years old, so 40 years ago, I never knew that we were on a planet. I didn't, like, I was in a small city. I just lived there. I had farms around me. Those are the people who fed me. But now you sit with kids and like, oh, I know where Australia is and I know there's kangaroos. Like, they're so knowledgeable. They have so much knowledge and like, that's what we have to embrace right now. It's make them that knowledge and build on it. So like I remember in university, they taught us like we are the one filling the vessel, because when they come to school, the vessel is empty. And it's like, I don't see that right now. The kids have knowledge. And when I saw a video, I forgot, on a TED Talk, and the lady were talking about the transformation of a school. And I really believe in that is that when my grandmother was a teacher in the 19s, she was the dictionary. She was the one having all the knowledge, and she was the one giving the knowledge to the students. In the 70s, if you wanted to learn something, you had the encyclopedia. So you just look in the book and you start reading. But now the kids, if they want to know something, like if they want to learn something, you just go on internet. You just, everything is accessible to them. So that's why we have to teach them how to use those tools instead of teaching them the knowledge. Like, I have a good example. I bought a ukulele for my daughter and I wanted to buy the book, and the guy laughed at me, said, "What are you talking? Like, your child is going to go on YouTube, find a video tutorials and learn how to play ukulele." And exactly that's what happened. Like, she's been playing for a month and it's going well. So that's, we have to shift our role. And that's, I think that's what happened with the education. The knowledge is such, it's around them. So.
So it's almost like a, I'm trying to, in my head, I'm trying to wrap it around. Is it simply a question of access to information through powers of the internet? Or is there some sort of higher level knowledge? Like, I don't know. I think about sometimes if you go all the way to like prehistory, you know, we had no knowledge. There was no knowledge. And now the average elementary school student comes out at roughly the education level of the average citizen of Rome. So is there some sort of like evolved brain thing? Or I don't even know if that's the right terms, but is there sort of a cultural like species increase in our knowledge, or is it just simply the advent of the internet that gives them this information?
That's interesting. I believe, well, I know like the parents are like with the younger kids, they're like, by kindergarten they already had piano lessons, they already played gymnastics, swimming lessons. I don't recall going to so many schools classes and stuff like that. So one of the things is that the parents start early on and they visit museum, like they go see shows, they travel. So that could be part of it also, that the knowledge is giving to them early on. They don't play as much. That's one of my own other concern, that sometimes the kids, they don't have time to be bored. They just like, okay, right now you have to go to your soccer practice, and then you have your gymnastic practice, and then you have to do an hour of piano. Like, do they have time to just play? I'm not sure. So, but I think that's part of it. In an early age, they have knowledge that we didn't have.
Agreed. I think there is. I'm not sure. It's something I've been thinking about a lot recently, is if it is literally just, it's easy to blame the internet, or if the internet really is the change. You know, I feel like that's the thing to point to. I mean, it's drastically changed every aspect of all of our lives. You know, this whole thing, this podcast wouldn't exist without the internet. We wouldn't be talking from Florida to Canada if this didn't exist. So obviously it's changed the world, but has it had a more profound positive change than I think a lot of people give it credit for? Or was this inevitable growth of intelligence of our species that is just being played out on the battlegrounds of the K-12 public school environment? Cool. That was fun. That was a good talk. I liked that. Just question one and we're rocking and rolling. I love it. Awesome. Well, I'm going to go to my second question, and I kind of suspect you've already touched on your answer to this, but my second question for my guests is always, what is something you're doing that you wish all other teachers would do?
Could I say inquiry-based learning?
You know, I kind of thought you might go there.
Well, that's the main thing. Like, ever since I've started doing it, like, I wrote I participated in a book and I wrote a story. And ever since I did that, I've been like feeling like I'm on a journey to share this practice. It's amazing how you can connect with the kids, how you can get them to know more things. And you really get to know the child. Like when I'm doing my report cards, it's amazing how I can describe the child and what their difficulties are, their, we call it defeat, like their challenge. And I could also say all their positive aspect, also what they know. So you really get to know the person, the child in front of you. So my thing is like inquiry-based learning all the way. Like one of the things that teachers sometimes try to do, they try to do it in their class, but they forget, as John Hattie said, it's you have to make sure that they have the knowledge before, like the...
Like a French. Pre-learning, pre-knowledge?
Yes, yes, exactly. So then if they have that, then you can go deeper. So sometimes the teacher said, oh, Chantal, it's not working. What did I do wrong? And I said, well, what did you do before the inquiry? Did you teach them? Like we still have to teach. We still have to do mini lessons, but you need those things to go deeper. So yeah, and you don't do it the whole day. Like I used to do it like 3 or 4 times a week, and that was basically enough for them to go deeper in their knowledge.
You mentioned earlier, and I just wanted to clarify it. You kind of mentioned it in passing, but you mentioned inquiry circles. Can you tell me, that's something I hadn't caught before. Can you tell me a little bit about what that is and how that looks?
Yes. So it's with the natural curiosity. So that's inquiry-based learning. It's, I don't know how you can say it's, that's what I've been taught. It's a school that I went to in Toronto. And what basically happens is that you have every kid sitting around in a circle and you're comfortably sitting. You can be on a chair or on the ground. Usually with the younger ones, you're on a carpet. And this, the teacher is also sitting with them at the same level. And that's very important. There's no someone higher than you. Like we're all at the same level. The teacher will have a paper, a crayon, or a computer, and she'll be taking notes of what the kids are talking about. So sometimes there'll be questions. Sometimes there'll be knowledge shared. Sometimes the knowledge is false. So that's a thing that you really want to note, and you want to make sure that you come back after the inquiry circle. So you're really there to observe and listen what's happening. And before you start the inquiry circle, you usually do a provocation. So you ask a question, or you come back, or you read a book, or it could be an experience you did in the classroom, a science experiment, a video you showed, or it could be just a question that a child came to school with. Like usually at this time of year when the snow comes, they have a lot of questions with that. So that's it. You just sit together, you listen, and the kids have questions. You write the questions, and then you plan your lessons with those questions.
How do you set that up? I just feel like if I put my son in a circle with a bunch of other 5-year-olds, they're not going to get to where I want them to be. Even with the pre-learning, I feel like they would have already forgotten what I said 5 minutes ago. that could just be my son because he's me and has his ADD as bad as I do. But, you know, how do you train that into them or build that up? What's the process look like to introduce this?
So the first time you do it, sometimes it doesn't last very long because it might be chaotic like that, or they'll raise their hand and everyone's raising their hand. Nobody's listening. So when you do it for maybe 5 minutes and you see it's not working out, you stop it and you say, okay, let's do some success criteria to when we're doing our inquiry learning. That's what we expect us. That's what we'll be doing. That's what we expect from us when we'll be doing it. So usually the first thing that comes up is that they say, well, we're going to sit comfortably so we can be listening and be focused on when someone is talking. We also, one of the success criteria is that we don't raise our hand when someone is speaking, because that's rude. Like we listen to the person, and when she's finished, we raise our hand, and the person that was speaking will choose another person to speak. So the teacher never interferes in that process. We respect each other. So if someone asks a question that sounds silly, we don't laugh. That's a question, and everyone is accepted in the circle and every question is accepted. So it's a process. At the first time in September, it's always weird to do it because you have kids like not listening or just not sure what's happening. But as you go on, usually by November, everyone's on point and everyone's listening and they really want to do it because they realize that it's part of their learning, because the question they'll be asking during the inquiry circle are the ones that they will be choose to do the learning. So if a child in the inquiry says, I'm wondering what will happen if I bring snow in the classroom. Well, when you bring the snow in the classroom, the child said, oh, madame, you're choosing my question. We're doing my experiment. I said, yeah, that's you're part of the of our learning today. So they get really engaged.
I like that. Yeah, that's cool. That's a cool process because it really does drive by what the kids need. And I think that's perfect. I think that's excellent. Wow. Awesome. Well, that's going to lead me into my third question again without transition, because we're just super professional here on the Planning Period Podcast. And my third question is, who is the greatest teacher you've ever had?
My greatest teacher I've ever had. I could probably say Monsieur Parisien. And it's funny because that teacher is now, her daughter is now a teacher that does inquiry-based learning with me. And one day, I'll just do a little parenthesis, a little story. We were sitting together at the ministry and we were learning how to do it. And she looked at me and said, Chantal, your voice sounds familiar. I've seen you somewhere. So we started talking and she said, well, I remember now you used to babysit me. I'm like, oh, this is weird. So yeah, that teacher, he was my basketball coach, but he was also my grade eight coach, teacher. And whenever we would do our tournament, basketball tournament, he would bring his daughter and I would take care of her because I was not the best basketball player. So I would play with her on the bench and just make her laugh and go to the bathroom. So I would babysit her during the tournaments. So that's it, Monsieur Parisien. I think that's what I look more in a teacher, and that's what I've been doing with my student, is that the respect. Like, he would listen to us if we had a bad day. He would encourage us if we had, like, he knew our weaknesses in basket or in school, and he would like, okay, you know, Shata, that's what you have a problem. Like, that's what you have to focus, and that's the tool. Like, he would give us a tool and say, okay, practice, practice, and you'll know you'll get it. So he was like always encouraging us, and whenever he had to talk to him, he was available. So yeah, he was a great teacher.
Do you remember any specific learning experiences you had in his class? Maybe not, you know, I guess you could go with basketball too, but any specific learning experiences that stick out in your mind?
No, unfortunately. In school, I was like the docile child that would just repeat whatever you wanted to learn, wanted to hear. But I wouldn't, like my kids, they always say that, like, okay, I've just memorized for the test and then the test is done. I would forget everything. Basically, that's what I did in school too. Like, I just listened, repeated what you wanted me to tell you, and then I would forget it. So unfortunately, I don't remember.
No, that's I think that's appropriate. I think, you know, you took from him that respect component and that listening to your students as peers, and that's what you've brought forward into your own practice. And I think that's perfectly appropriate. I think that lines up.
You know, I think
in my own experience, I don't remember a lot of the quote unquote learning. I was talking about this with my kids today, as you know, it's the beginning of the semester. And so we're reevaluating how my entire class functions. And I've said, hey, we're ready to throw everything out and start over because it's not working and it's not working well enough. We need to do better. And we're reiterating. And, you know, and then one of the things I said, I go, look, this entire school experience is a house of cards just waiting to be knocked over. None of this matters. Nothing I learned in high school has any impact on what I do now. I learned how to type in high school. I use that every day, but that's it. That's the only thing. I said, none of the rest of this matters. And I don't want my room to perpetuate that. I want my room to be something different. So how do we make that happen? What do we need to do to change that thought process for you guys? And I think yours is an echo of the same thing, is that it's the remembered part is the relationships, the components that mattered were the respect. And I think that's what you've taken forward into your own career.
Yep, that's definitely. And that's one of the things I've read, that kids deserve it. And I'm trying to do it in French, like we call it, éducation positive. So it's positive education. And I keep doing a chat about it on we do it 3 times a year. We try to do it 3 times a year, and we get French teachers talking about what the positive things that they're doing in school. So we can still, the kids still want to come. They're not like running away from school, but they want to come to school.
Yeah. And I think it's so critical that we remember that. It's easy for teachers a lot of times to say, oh, the kids just don't care. The kids just don't care. And you get to this level of sort of mailing it in and copy and repeat, copy, paste, repeat, copy, paste, repeat. And I think it's so critical that whether it's through inquiry-based learning or some other system, we need to get to the point where our kids want to be in school, where school doesn't have to be this dreaded thing. You know, today was, for me, it was my first day back at work. You know, we've had 2 weeks off, and there was that dread in my own heart, you know, where I'm like, ugh, I don't want to go back. But then I was like, you know what? I get to see the kids. I get to do something cool. I have a great job. I'm happy with it. And I let that go, and I moved on. And for so many of my kids, it was just dead in the eyes. They were just, this is the end of the good 2 weeks, so the last 6 months, so now here we go again. And I don't want my own son to feel that way, and I don't want my students to feel that way. And even if it's only in my class of the 7 classes they're in, or in your case, in K-2, when they have you and then have to go to some other less appropriate teacher, they have something to look forward to. And that's what I hope we're doing, and I feel like you're doing for sure.
Yes, definitely. Like I saw somewhere, I think it was on Twitter, and he said, like, if the kids didn't have to go to school, like if it wasn't the law, no kids would come because they're bored out of their mind. Like it's because it's the law they come, but other than that, they wouldn't.
That's sad.
So that's very sad. Yeah.
To be fair, I don't think I would have gone to school if it wasn't the law either. I don't think I'm any different, but it is sad. It's sad now that I'm the adult in that equation.
Yeah. So we're making the difference.
Yeah, I think you're on the right track. It definitely sounds like your kids would come to school even if they didn't have to. It definitely feels that way.
Thank you. I think so.
Well, Chantal, I really appreciate you being on the show. I know you have a snowstorm outside and you've got to deal with that situation. I don't actually know what that's like, but you have one. It's a thing. It's like this. It's basically the equivalent. Oh, look, there's snow. She's showing me on her camera now. Ooh, looky. All kinds of white. That's what snow looks like. Now I know.
Don't have the cold.
Yeah, no. I was just in Georgia, which was like 30 degrees Fahrenheit. Yeah. That's the same. It's a constant joke for me on Twitter with all of my voice ed family of like, they tell me the temperature in Celsius. And I'm like, that's the same as what I have, right? That's exactly the same thing. I don't math. I don't know.
I don't get it.
But again, thank you for being with me. I really appreciate it. Tell my audience how they can get a hold of you if they want to reach out and learn more about inquiry-based learning and want to know your take on it. How can they get a hold of you?
Sure. So I'm on Twitter. It's Chantal _ Koala. And I'm right now building my site, so I might have something up. So I'll share it on Twitter if they want to learn new things about inquiry. It's going to be in French, but I'll try to do, I think I'm going to do if sometimes in bilingual, so I can have my English friends also to have resources.
All of us ignorant Americans that only speak one language. We got you. We'll support you. Thank you for that. You know, I really appreciate it, but I have to ask before you go, Chantal Koala, where does that come from?
I wanted to start Twitter to be discreet. I just wanted to follow and see what was happening. And then it went crazy. People were following me. And being discreet didn't work for me. So Koala comes from I was a girl guide. And my totem was Koala, docile Koala. So I was someone who they thought, like, they give you an, do you know about the Girl Guides?
I think it's similar to what we have Girl Scouts, right? Brownies,
yeah,
and Girl
exactly.
Scouts. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Yeah, so that was my name. I was a koala. So
the docile koala.
Yeah.
Good to know. And then ironically, you use docile koala and then spread your voice on Twitter so the world can hear you. That's appropriate.
That's crazy.
Well, Chantal.
Usually I'm fine.
Nah, well, hey, you're on a mic. You're trying, right?
Yep.
Well, thank you very much for being on the show. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. It was a pleasure for me to share with you my love of inquiry.
Perfect.
Thank you.
Thank you again, Chantal, for joining me on the podcast. You really gave a great perspective on IBL and listening to your kids and just an honest voice, and I really appreciate that. If you want to connect with Chantal, you can find her on Twitter. She's at Chantal_koala. If you have comments or questions about the show, you can always connect with me on Twitter. I'm at Brad Schreffler. I love to hear from you guys. Or if you're interested in being a guest on the show, that's another great place to reach out for that as well. Or if you have feedback on anything about the show at all, let me know. Before I close out this week's episode, though, I do have one favor to ask of you. I am currently competing to present a session at ISTE about podcasting. I want to prove that starting your own podcast isn't only easy, but should really be a necessity for many teachers. As we all sit here and argue the importance of making our students creators and not just consumers of content, it is really crucial that we live that battle ourselves every day, and podcasting is a great way to do that. In order to further that goal, though, I really need your votes. So if you could, take a minute or two and go to bit.ly/BradISTE, capital B-R-A-D, capital I-S-T-E, bit.ly/BradISTE, and vote for my session. It only takes a minute to sign up for an account and vote. You don't even really have to verify email address or anything. It's really easy to do, and I would really appreciate it because I really want to present out at that conference. If you've listened to the show for any amount of time, you know that conference is near and dear to my heart, and I really would like to present out there this year. And thank you to all of you who have already seen the tweets and everything else and have gone out and voted. I really appreciate your support. Until next week, just go out and listen to your students. Music for the Planning Period podcast is the song Vicious by Kevin MacLeod, used under Creative Commons. You can find him at incompetech.com. The Planning Period podcast is also a proud member of the VoiceEd Radio Network, a 24-hour radio network all about education all the time. VoiceEd Radio. Your voice is right here.